Welcome back, Tiger fans, to Rockin' Nation's Football Podcast. I'm Nate Edwards. That's Brandon BK Kiley. This is Before the Box Score. Missouri beat Florida. Missouri beat Florida in overtime, 24-23. I told y'all, man, we trade off wins, twos and twos, and it was Missouri's time to win. There's nothing in the world that could happen yesterday that would preclude Missouri from not winning that game. So, congratulations to Drinkwitz. Congratulations to the entire Missouri team, especially the seniors. You went out with a win. BK, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. You also told me that Florida doesn't kick field goals, and then all they did was kick a parade of field goals
all day long.
So, I mean, 50-50.
I don't know what that was about. I mean, we'll just dive into it. The game yesterday was not enjoyable. Let's just get that out of the way, first and foremost. I suppose if you like defensive-flavored football, you might have enjoyed that particular one, but it was just not a very good game to watch. It was, you know, as aforementioned, the field goals, just over and over. You get into the red zone, everybody stalls out. Try to run a ball, less than 2 yards per carry. Try to throw the ball, break it up. Like, if you like defense, this is your jam. But I think, you know, even people who like defense looked at this and went, wow, these are two teams who just can't execute, who are just trying not to lose. I'm right on that, correct?
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we're going to have the conversation in a grander scheme of things. Like, the quarterback play just was really poor on Missouri's part for, I mean, 55 minutes or so. And then on Florida's side of things, like, that was just a team that desperately wanted to lose. And what I mean by, like, defensively, I actually thought they had a pretty inspired effort on the defensive side of the ball, to be totally honest with you, by Florida. Yeah. But offensively, they wanted no part of winning that football game. Drops, missed blocks, a quarterback who just seemed to be confused even before the ball was snapped. I mean, it was a really, really poor effort on everybody's behalf on the Florida side of things offensively. And the same was true for a large portion of the game offensively for Missouri. They just couldn't get anything going. The offensive line couldn't open up holes for the first three quarters for Tyler Beatty. Connor Bazelak couldn't find open receivers. The receivers weren't creating a bunch of separation. And when they did, there were a couple of drops. It was bad. The execution was poor on both sides, and the last thing we needed from a game like that was overtime. But guess what, Nate? That's exactly what we got.
That is exactly what we got. And if you watch that game for any stretch of time, you recognize pretty early that this Missouri team was not equipped to out-duel Florida in a prolonged overtime shootout. So the fact that Drinkwitz went for two on that first possession was absolutely the correct decision to make. The play was... it worked. I don't know if that's how they drew it up or they just got lucky, but it was great. You know, when you, even if it's a mediocre game between two mediocre teams, like when you ratchet up the stakes like that, especially in overtime, it's thrilling to win. And, you know, you mentioned it as it was happening, like, what a cool way for Daniel Parker Jr. to end his career at home, catching the 2-point conversion there. But really just for the seniors overall, like we mentioned on the last show, it's been a tumultuous couple of years for those guys, not only going through coaching changes, but COVID and all that sort of stuff. And the guys stuck with it. And, you know, Eli Drinkwitz mentioned it in his post game presser as well. Like, you know, just the things that were thrown at them. And a lot of these, the COVID seniors, the super seniors, graduates, like the ones who came back, particularly like your Kiki Chisholms, Michael Wilsons, Mike Maietti in particular, they came back to go to a bowl game. And you think about Mizzou, you go back to 2017, Barry Odom got into a bowl and they lost. 2018, Barry Odom got into a bowl and lost. 2019, they won six games. They were bowl eligible, but, you know, NCAA said no. And then last year, could have gone to a bowl and it was canceled for COVID. So, like, think of a Mike Maietti who transferred to Missouri because he was the best player on a terrible Rutgers team. And he gets bowl eligible his first year and gets denied because he can't field a team. He risks it to come back, try it again, and they get that sixth win. Like, that makes me very happy for him and for any of the other guys who came back for that reason, because it was not looking good halfway through the season, and credit to them, they turned it around and they got one of their goals.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Daniel Parker Jr. It's the first time he's been to a bowl game since his freshman year. That's pretty wild to think about, man. I mean, this team has been through a lot over the last 4 years. You had the coaching change. You've been through multiple defensive coordinators now. You've been through a few different offensive coordinators. It's just been a weird, tumultuous 4 or 5 year stretch for a lot of these guys. And so for them to be able to get back to one, it is an accomplishment. I know that the bowl games have been diminished and they are not valued the way they once were. And frankly, they shouldn't be valued the way they once were. But given where Missouri was as a program, given where they're trying to go, it is an achievement for them to be able to get back to one this year. And for them to be able to do it after their terrible start to the season, it's also an achievement. This was a team that was 2-3 and had just lost at home in what was going to go down as one of the worst home losses in program history to Tennessee. A lot of teams at that point, it's over. It's done. You're not coming back from something like that. For this team to be able to battle back, you got the win at against North Texas. It's ugly, but you get the win at Vandy, and it was a pass-fail game. And then the last 2 weeks, really, for them to be able to win against two relative peer programs, that's what stands out to me. Those were hard-fought wins. I know that South Carolina is not a great team, although, hey, did you see what they did this week? Mm-hmm. I know Florida was ready to wilt, but this is a team that if they were able to get ahead of you early, they have enough talent to bury you afterwards. So credit where it's due. This Tigers team deserves a lot of credit for being able to get to a bowl game once again. These things aren't handed to you. As much as they've been devalued, they do still have some meaning.
Yeah. And I mean, Missouri has been bowl eligible since 2017. It's just for wonky circumstances, they haven't gone. So, you know, this is for all of the lows, let's just call them lows, that we've experienced as fans. This Missouri has been able to do the bare minimum to get into the postseason, like for whatever that's worth. Hopefully we can actually see them, you know, partake in a bowl game and they get their trip. I know most people don't care about bowls. I certainly don't watch them to the extent that I used to, but they matter for individual teams. They matter for individual players like a Mike Maietti, like a Kiki Chisholm, like a New Mexico State that goes to a bowl for the first time in like 60 years, a couple years ago. Like it matters to them. It might not matter.
Was it Eastern Michigan that went for the first time in a long time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe ever. Yeah. Like there are teams out there who are looking to just break that streak. And to them, it matters. And it doesn't matter to Ohio State or Notre Dame, but you know, that's not what the sport's about. Sport's about your little corner and making it count. And, you know, the fact that Missouri has been bowl eligible, but just hasn't been able to play is, you know, that sucks, but here we are. We got an opportunity and they certainly earned it. And they earned it off the back of the defense, which again, in 2021, just blows my freaking mind. I mean, you all listen to this show. You know how many times we've said that it's not getting better. It's not getting better. Like you don't see turnarounds in season like this. You just don't. And the fact that this defense has been able to do that at every level, including our much maligned linebackers, like, I don't know what Kool-Aid they're drinking, but it's working. And they understand the system. They're flying to the ball. They're making tackles, which was a problem at the beginning of the year. And here we are in a defensive slugfest against Florida. And we win the game off of our defense. It's incredible. And it's credit to Blaze Aldridge, who could have, like you said, given up after Tennessee. It's a credit to Kobe Whiteside and Keel Byers, who stuck with it and have really turned into some disruptive pieces. And it's really to that entire defense. It's a tight unit, and a couple of new guys stepped up, but like they have delivered. And if it wasn't for this defense yesterday, this game would have been over in the first 20 minutes, and it wasn't. And Missouri won. And credit to Steve Wilks, that was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. And this, I mentioned it in my post-game wrap-up piece, but it's a little bit of everything. The personnel has changed. Chad Bailey deserves a ton of credit for getting in there, and he's been the player that we were hoping he would be. He was a 4-star player that came in with the pedigree that everybody believed, okay, maybe this guy can be a pretty solid impact starting linebacker. And for whatever reason, it just never really happened early on for him at Mizzou. And then he was inserted into the lineup, and it was like, oh, this guy's kind of good. Like, he can play. And on Saturday, he finished with 9 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and overall was just a difference maker for them. Blaze Aldridge, I know Gabe DeArmond of Power Mizzou mentioned this on Twitter the other day, and it's a fair point. He said he's never seen a Missouri player improve as much from the beginning of the season to where they were at the end of the season as Blaze Aldridge did this year. I can't think of an example of somebody that has improved more than mm-hmm. Aldridge. I mean, you could come up with a list of guys that have done something similar, but I mean, he went from a guy who was brought in to be, for all intents and purposes, the Nick Bolton replacement. Did not live up to that billing, obviously, because nobody can, because Nick Bolton is an All-American, and then ended up benched. Like, he was benched mid-season. He was a guy that barely saw snaps for a game or two. He got his spot back. He ended up forming what is now a formidable duo in the middle of that defense with Chad Bailey, and on Saturday, he was a difference maker. That dude was everywhere, man. His hair was on fire. He ended up with two tackles for loss, two quarterback hurries, and those don't even tell the story of just how impressive he was. He was everywhere. And the result was Missouri putting yet another good performance up against the run. South Carolina, 57 yards on the ground, fewer than 2 yards per carry. Florida, fewer than 100 yards on the ground, 2.4 yards per carry. Nate, it's the first time since 2018 that Missouri held back-to-back Power 5 opponents to fewer than 3 yards per carry. This was not just a good performance. This was a throwback performance to what Missouri's defense looked like at its peak mm-hmm. under Barry Odom. Mm-hmm. If they had this defense earlier in the year, this team is at probably finishing the year 8-4. They would be 8-3 right now. They would have wins against Boston College and Kentucky, and they would currently be in second in the SEC East. Mm-hmm. It's a wild thing to imagine. But that's the difference between where Missouri's at right now and where it could have been if they had this performance earlier in the year. But that's not to take away from what they're doing now. They finally got there, and it should give you some hope for what this team can be next year.
Absolutely. I don't know how this defensive line that got completely blown off the ball for the first six games all of a sudden figured out how to crash the middle and shut down the run. I don't get it. I don't know how linebackers who were constantly out of position and getting just blocked right out of the play with no effort all of a sudden just go, Oh yeah. And like, and just change it. The tackling. Well, Missouri had like what, 25 missed tackles against Tennessee and then 3 yesterday. Like, it's just absolutely incredible. It's scheme. They're playing the scheme better. It's effort. They're not getting blown off the ball. And then really it's open field tackling. And I think that's the biggest one. Blaze Aldridge had two plays where he was basically by himself. He was the last line of defense, literally. And he made an open field single tackle. The last one was on that Florida drive right before they kicked the field goal. He played the option by himself. he feinted towards Emory Jones, forced Jones to pitch it. And then forced Damian Pierce out of bounds before he got to the first down marker. And I'm like, we didn't see that at all. In the first six games, you know, Blaze was just this, you know, Viking berserker who could, you know, rush the quarterback and that was about it. And now all of a sudden he's disciplined and can play the run. Like, wow, that's incredible. And then not only that, but a Caleb Evans, who I guess is, you know, shutting it down for the year so he can save up for the NFL or whatever. He's out, and DJ Jackson, who has been kind of the rotational corner, replacing Ish Burdine this year, he gets the start and does tremendous. He breaks up two passes. He's making open field tackles. He's shutting down Justin Shorter and Jacob Copeland, you know, 4- and 5-star receivers. Like, what the heck is happening here? Like, I understand, like, Emory Jones can't read a defense to save his life. Like, all their passes are very short, very easy stuff. I understand that. At the same time, these guys put up points on Alabama. These guys put up points on every defense that they face, and Missouri shut them down. It's unbelievable. And, you know, tip of the cap to Blaze and the defense, but especially DJ Jackson, the freshman, thrust into a starting position kind of last minute, and the dude thrived.
The secondary quietly has played pretty well of late. I mean, they again have not been perfect, but that's not the bar to clear. And also in this game, they didn't have their best defensive player. Like, forget the secondary. Caleb Evans is their best defensive player. That guy's mm-hmm. going to be a future pro for a reason. And it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. They went out there and played really well. Jalen Carlisle has a couple of plays every week where you're like, ooh, what is going on there? But thus is the life of being a free safety, and you're not going to be perfect. And when you aren't perfect at that spot, it looks a little bit ugly. Martez Manuel had a couple of good plays. McGuire has now become a building block for this team along the defensive line. Jeffcoat is back to being the guy that he was a year ago. I think Chris Abrams-Drain has developed into a really impressive nickel cornerback.
Agree.
And that is not to diminish what he is. Chris Abrams-Drain as a nickel corner is the type of piece that is really hard to find. You just can't find those dudes because he can tackle. He is very good on the two-way go, which means the slot receiver, because there isn't the boundary, the sideline next to him, that slot receiver can go in or they can go out. And Abrams-Drain is quick enough to make a move on either of those at any given time. Does he struggle at times with tracking the ball? Yeah. Does he struggle at times with a double move? He's new to the position, and he's going to continue to improve. But what he does really, really well. I say all of that to say, I'm kind of excited about what this defense is going to be next year. I don't know what the ceiling is. I would say middle of the pack, probably. But if you can get that out of this defensive unit, that's a hell of an upgrade from where they were at the beginning of the season. And I had somebody tweet me yesterday, Nate. They said, has Steve Wilks done enough to save his job?
Oh, geez. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Like at this point, I don't even think it's a thought to fire him.
No.
I don't know how you could possibly be in the camp of that dude still needs to go. I mean, it was ugly early on, but for about 4 weeks now, you've had steady improvement, almost linear improvement from the Vanderbilts till where you are today. It's probably going to look ugly against Arkansas because Arkansas is really good and that offense makes everybody look bad because their quarterback is a superstar. But that's not going to mean that this team didn't take steps forward defensively this year. I think Wilks, there's no doubt about it. I think he's got to be back next year.
I totally agree. You lose Allie Green, you lose Caleb Evans. Okay. Carlisle and Manuel are back. So, I mean, secondary tends to struggle when it's super young. And if you're thinking about who your corners are going to be, DJ Jackson seems to be playing himself into a position where he's going to be a starter next year. Chris Abrams-Drain returns. Enos Rexstraw will be back, assuming he'll be back from injury. And then you add Marcus Scott into kind of the poo-poo platter of Ish Burdine, Davion Sistrunk, Snoop Reeves, and Dalen Carnell. Oh, and Chris Sheeran. So, like, you got young options kind of across the board there. They're young. My point is that they're young, but they're also really good. Like, the ones that we've seen so far have been really good. The oldest is going to be Burdine and Rakestraw, and we've seen what they can do. So, you know, even losing two NFL caliber corners and kind of putting some more youth out there, I'm not concerned. Well, I'm not concerned yet, I should say. I do wonder if they hit the transfer portal for like a transfer corner, someone else just to have some experience back there. But even then, I mean, it's amazing.
I'm pretty okay with what they have, honestly.
I would too. I
would be totally fine with him going out and getting another guy that has experience because you can never have too many quality corners. But what they have right now, if in a worst case scenario, that's what they brought back next year, I think they'd be fine.
I would be fine with it too. It's amazing how calling a mix of zone and man can make your secondary look a lot better than just calling man every single play. So we'll, you know, I feel good about them now. You never know how Rakestraw is going to come back, you know, whether, especially with the type of injury he had, how it's going to play out, but you've got a lot of quality options here and the youth have been playing so far. You know, Chris Sheeran's been pretty good, especially when he blitzes from his nickel slot. So I feel good about the secondary. And then you think about, you know, linebackers are going to be interesting because you do lose Blaze.
You got one.
You got Chad Bailey coming back. And then, you know, whatever.
You got one.
Yeah. But then think about your defensive line. You know, you got every single end coming back except for Hansford and Turner, but he's been injured. And you do get kind of a forced reset at tackle, but you do get Robinson and Wingo back, which are your most disruptive guys.
And Gracie will be in that conversation Gracie next will be year there as well.
For sure. Realist
George. He's going to be next year's Wingo, where everybody's like, whoa, this guy is really good right away.
Yeah. So you've got kind of an exciting future with this defense because you do rotate in a lot of youth, and they did kind of get their butts blown off for a good chunk of the year. But like, that's why you do it, to get them experience. So when, you know, they're still young and they can learn and get better. So no, don't fire Wilkes. I know that sounds crazy coming from me. But we all saw what we saw in the first six games. And if you've been paying attention in the last four, then there's no way you should fire the guy. Give him another shot. I'm not saying that it's perfect. I'm not saying everything's fixed. I'm not saying he's going to have some clunker games here and there, but you know, we ragged him for putting this defense into a terrible position to start the year. You also have to turn around and give him credit for when he digs him out of the hole. And that's what he's done. He's turned this thing around, and because he has, you absolutely give him another year for sure. No question. Give him another year.
Yeah, he's earned it at this point, and all of the players that you wanted to take a step forward, for the most part, have. And that's the other thing that I think is important when you're in a situation like this is, A, the results have been better, and B, the guys that you needed to show progress this year have. And so that is both player development and also on-field results. Mm-hmm. Are there guys that I wish we could see more of? Sure, yeah. Like, I mean, one of my personal favorites is Dalen Carnell, and we have seen almost none of him this year. Mm-hmm. But all the guys that I've seen them put out there at cornerback, it's hard for me, who has not seen Dalen Carnell at practice, to tell you he needs to be on the field when these other guys are performing well. Like, Ali Green came in and he was supposed to be an NFL corner. I don't know that I've seen that from him so far this year, but he's been fine. DJ Jackson came in on Saturday and was excellent for them. Caleb Evans has been really good when he was out there, and his Rakestraw had a pretty good start to the season. So it's just hard for me to be like, got to get that guy in there. You are failing by not developing him more when all of these other dudes have been pretty darn good. And Chris Abrams train as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a young group. And, you know, that's kind of by design because they brought in five guys from the secondary last recruiting class. But and then you add another one with Marcus Scott. But that's OK. I mean, you know, for Charlie Harbison, the secondary coach, he's done a good job coaching these guys up. And, you know, kind of all year, the secondary really hasn't been a problem. I know they got burned by Georgia and Tennessee, but everyone gets burned.
Our boy
by
Fletch,
Georgia.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Aaron Fletcher, you know, coaching up the corners, like, you know. The secondary has been the strength. It was always the kind of the front six that are getting pushed around. Now they have got their stuff together. Like, this is good, man. I'm feeling really good about this defense, and I'm glad that I do, because it was some bleak times right around the middle of this season. So credit to them. Very exciting kind of going forward. I can't wait to see what they can do as far as development and getting better. And then we get to the quarterback, because as good as the defense was yesterday, the quarterback play was pretty much the exact opposite. If you look at what Connor Bazelak was able to do against Florida, now a good Florida defense, which is rare because Todd Grantham defenses suck, but like, they're talented and they had their stuff together yesterday. Bays went 15 for 26 for 165 yards. That's a 57% completion percentage. That's his worst of the year so far. And he didn't have any interceptions or fumbles, which is, wow, thank God. But he also got sacked five times. So, BK, you I think you put this in your five things as well, but you definitely texted it to me. Can you go ahead and rattle off that very interesting stat that you talked about with his passing yardage in particular, if you take out, a couple of throws maybe?
Yeah, so it's three plays. He threw a 50-50 ball to Toski Dove early in the game. That goes for 50 yards. He had a really nice throw across the middle to Nico Hay, 26-yard gain. Mm-hmm. Another nice throw to Nico Hay on the touchdown, which was a beautiful design and play call, by the way, from Eli Drinkwitz. So, yeah, Beatty apparently as well, who suggested it because they were apparently calling out the screens every time they would run them. That went for 41. So those three plays that I just referenced went for a combined 117 yards. His other 23 passing attempts went for a combined 48 yards. He also, by the way, took six sacks for a loss of 28 yards. So on his other 29 dropbacks, you had a net of 40 yards. I should probably mention now, they also had two intentional grounding calls as well. So your net for those other, what is that, 30 dropbacks mm-hmm. was like negative 10 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, he won the game. And that's what matters. And he had the biggest throw in the biggest moment. The ball was in his hand and they trusted him to make a play. So I want to start out there because I'm sure there will be some who hear what I'm about to say and are like, yeah, but he won, BK. So how are you possibly criticizing him? I'm saying it on the front end. Credit to Connor Bazelak for overcoming all of that, which happened in the first 55 minutes of the game, to be able to then make the biggest play in the biggest moment to win the game. Full kudos there. Credit to him. That was a terrible game for Connor Bazelak. He was not good on Saturday. I wanted him to be good. I wanted him to go out there and to shut me up, to shut any critics up, to prove to everybody he is clearly, definitively, without an ounce of doubt, the best quarterback for the University of Missouri, both for the here and now and for 2022 and beyond. I don't know how anybody could have watched that on Saturday, including Eli Drinkwitz, by the way, and said to themselves, this is the guy that gives Missouri the best chance to win this game. I just don't know how you could do that. And if you did, which apparently Drinkwitz did, because there was never even a thought to bring Bazelak out of that game, otherwise at some point he would have taken him out. I think it says a lot about the way that this coaching staff views Brady Cook and the way that they view Tyler Macon. I don't know what Brady Cook thinks of his future. I don't know what he wants to accomplish in his college career. Maybe he just wants to attend Mizzou and this has been a lifelong dream and football is secondary for him. That's possible. I hope he ends up starting at Mizzou. I hope he goes on to have a great career here. I don't know how he could watch that game on Saturday and think anything other than I'm never going to start here if I'm not thrown into the game at any point in this one. I don't get it, man. I really don't. That was the one thing that you can say. He did not have an interception in that game.
Yep.
So kudos to him for that. That is the biggest thing that he had to avoid, and he was able to do it on Saturday. So credit to him for doing so. But this team has a quarterback problem right now. The defense is good enough to be able to keep them in games, but Florida tried time and time and time again to hand it over on a silver platter to Missouri's offense, and Bazelak was actively holding them back. If you want to check for any of the videos, I did a lot of videos throughout the game to show exactly what was going wrong. He had no opportunity to run because apparently he's wearing a wrap around his knee that doesn't allow him to run right now. It's not an injury issue. It's a wrap that literally makes it impossible for him to be able to be mobile. So that was interesting to find out about on the SEC Network broadcast. As a result of that, he can't run in the zone read game, which means that those reads are not actual reads. It's just a handoff. Mm-hmm. So you're not accomplishing anything, and the defense is able to sell out as a result. His throwing against pressure was once again a problem. His accuracy from start to finish throughout the day was just not good. He was seeing open receivers and was unwilling to throw to them, especially across the middle. Again, all of the issues that we have documented throughout this season showed up in a big, big way on Saturday against Florida, and they could have and maybe should have cost the team the win.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't. They won. He was the one that made the play when it mattered. But that was not a well quarterbacked game by Mizzou on Saturday.
No, no. 15-26 is 57%. That's his worst game as a Tiger ever. Five sacks. That's the most he's ever taken. Easily his worst performance there. You know, you can sit here and you can say, well, what does a quarterback need to do? Quarterback needs to call the plays, needs to get everybody lined up, needs to pass the ball. Well, number one, that's an overly simplistic view of the quarterback position. But number two, you can take even the most statuey of statuesque quarterbacks, you know, they got to be able to move. Tom Brady, the reason he's so good is he can climb the pocket so well. And guess what? He runs like three or four times a game anyway. You know, he's 40,000 years old and he's still hoofing it every once in a while. But this is the college game. And at the college level, your quarterback, whether he's a pro prospect or a converted receiver, you gotta be able to do a little bit of both. If you're, you know, an awesome athlete who's got a, you know, 4.2 40, and you know, you can stiff arm dudes into the ground, you still gotta be able to throw it fairly accurately. If you are, you know, the next Trevor Lawrence, you still need to be able to tuck it and run every once in a while. And right now, Bazelak can't run because even though he's not injured, we got something on his leg that makes it impossible for him to run. So that's cool. And then, like you said, he's unwilling to make the pass that needs to be made. The anticipation of the routes, how he views coverage, how he views the defense, something's up because he doesn't have the confidence to make those passes. So if you can't run, you're not a threat in the running game, whether it's the zone read or, you know, a draw. You can't scramble. If your receivers are covered, you're not going to tuck it and go for 3 yards. If you can't really navigate the pocket well, which all of those sacks, he basically just hugged the dude as he got mauled to the ground. He's like, well, I'm not going anywhere. Might as well make my landing soft. Like, he didn't fight any of those sacks. He can't move. He can't move. And it's his right knee. That's his plant leg. You know, quarterback coaches talk about rocking fire. He ain't rocking. So he ain't firing either. Think of all those downfield passes. We've seen it all year. Just these arm farts that just flop through the air and land hopefully in the place where they need to be, but they're not. It's either, you know, in a place where it's bringing Dominic Lovett back to the defender, or it's not towards the sideline and the defender picks it off. Or even during the game yesterday, the Towski Dove and Kiki Chisholm had to like just jump up and catch it and save his ass because it was a terrible throw. He's just floating it to him. He's got no ability to put any power in his throw. So literally, what part of the quarterback position does he do well right now? Leadership?
Seems like his teammates like him. Yeah, I was about to say that seems to be the thing.
I'm good with that. I'm good with your team like rallying behind a guy. But if you've got a guy who can't run, can't move, can't throw, I'm at a loss of what you want from your quarterback here that you think is like, he doesn't have the qualities. He's got the guys like him. And then I guess everyone hates Brady Cook, even though he can do everything. So it's beyond me, man. But Drinkwitz is the guy that you got to convince. Or maybe even Bush Hamden, I don't know. But it's Drinkwitz's offense, so he's going to trot him out there. I guarantee you he starts against Arkansas. I guarantee you Barry Odom eats his lunch. And I don't know what to do. If that's just this season, if that's just 2021, and then we reset and try it again next year, and or someone transfers or whatever, that's fine. But it just seems to me, if you want the best chance to win the game, Bazelak's not the answer. And yet, here we are trotting him out every game. So I think that's just kind of how it's going to be at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, going into spring ball, I think that Connor Bazelak will finish spring ball as the starting quarterback for Mizzou.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
I don't know how anybody could have another take other than that after what we've seen so far this season. I also think that if you are a Missouri fan that is done watching Connor Bazelak as the starting quarterback, the guy that you should be rooting for is Sam Horn. Mm-hmm. Which would mean, yes, you have a true freshman starting at quarterback next year. But I think that's your best option. If you're not going to have Bazelak there, it's either going to be Sam Horn, or if they want to go to the transfer portal, they could go that route as well. I would assume at least one of Brady Cook and or Tyler Macon transfers this offseason. This is not me reporting anything, just speculating based on everything that we've all seen. I mean, if they didn't get into that game, and we'll see with Macon. I think that's a little bit different. But Cook clearly is ready to play. Mm-hmm. They have just determined he's not good enough to play when Connor Bazelak is healthy. And Bazelak's at like 70% right now. Mm-hmm. And they have determined, even in a game in which he was playing poorly, that guy was the better one for us to play with. So I feel bad for Brady Cook, because I can't imagine having watched that game on Saturday and having to say to myself, wow, they think that this guy is better than me. And I have to imagine, because Brady Cook is a confident kid, I have to imagine he believed he gave Missouri a better chance to win on Saturday, and I frankly agree with him. But I'm not the one that makes the decisions. Neither is Brady Cook. Eli Drinkwitz, for one reason or another, and he definitely has reasons. He is not a dumb football coach. He is a smart football coach who clearly believes that there is a reason why he is right on this. He believes Connor Bazelak gives his team the best chance to win, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon.
No. I Drinkwitz knows way more about this team and offense and everything, more than I can do. You can still question the guy.
Yeah, 100%.
Like,
oh, I disagree with it. I think he's wrong, but...
Yeah, yeah, I think he's wrong, too. I understand that he's smarter than me. I still think he's wrong, but just based off of what we've seen. And that's okay. Like, he still has my support, and I still believe he's great, but, like, I don't think he's right about this. I really, really don't. I too, feel bad for Brady Cook. I especially felt bad because, like, when they would take timeouts, the first guy out there was Cook, high-fiving everybody. He's circling around the huddle, you know, and, like, I could just feel like, oh, just put me in, coach. Let me do it. And when is it happening? I just felt so bad for the kid. But I will say, I mean, yeah. We have talked about this a lot, and there's no use just putting it into the ether and you know, willing it to happen. But he would be the least surprising transfer from this team if it were to happen, because, yeah, we're going to trot out a one-armed, one-leg Connor Bazelak before we trot out Brady Cook. So that's where we're at. But, yes, I mean, hey, Missouri won. Bazelak did make that throw. Anyone could have made that throw, but Bazelak made the throw to win the game. So credit to him and all that. Really the hero of the game, really the hero of any game that we've won, is Tyler Beatty. And we're now the portion of the podcast where we have the Tyler Beatty Appreciation Hour. God, I think it, we have already said there is nothing left to be said. I think anytime we write a piece or we bring him up in the podcast, we preface it with what else can you say? Because he has proven everything three games into the season, let alone, 10 games, 10, 11, and 12. So Tyler Beatty was awesome. Wasn't so great in the passing game. That's the second straight game that he has been less than effective catching the ball. But that's not what you're really looking for. 27 rushes, 146 yards. 5.4 yards per carry. And oh, by the way, almost all of them came in the second half. Tyler Beatty's awesome. His offensive line was a little sketchy, but like he's so much better that he can cover that stuff up. And he did it. He had another great game.
I loved that performance because I think it answered the final question. It was like getting to the final boss in one of those video games that you would play whenever you were a kid. And he had like one last thing to prove to just announce his presence, right? Not that anybody was questioning it at this point, but I think the last thing that we hadn't really seen from him this year, because he's shown us so many different styles of games. He's won in the passing game. He's won in the running game. He's won with big plays. He's won with small plays. He's won at the goal line. He's won on short yardage situations. He's done basically everything. The one thing he hadn't really done so far this year is just that old school Larry Roundtree grind it out, find a way in a gritty performance to get you there in the end. And that's what he did on Saturday. He finished the first half, and it looked like Missouri just wasn't going to be able to run the ball in this game. He had 8 carries for 19 yards in the first half. His longest run in the first half went for 6 yards, and he was stopped for no gain or behind the line of scrimmage on 3 of those 8 carries. And then in the second half, he just dominated. 19 carries in the second half for 127 yards. Or this is basically after halftime, so that includes overtime. Just a remarkable performance. And he was a grinder in that one. He's the best player on the field in every game that he plays in. He's not going to be a Heisman finalist, but after that kind of a performance against what is a pretty solid defense and a defense that had a really good effort on Saturday, I couldn't have been more impressed with what we saw from Tyler Beatty. And it really was, to me, the last question that I really hadn't seen him have a game with that style. Mm-hmm. And he is now in the country 2nd in yards from scrimmage, and among Power 5 players, he is 1st in the country in yards from scrimmage. What a tremendous season for
Tyler. I was going to say, do you know who's 1st in the country?
Yeah, kid they played against in the opening game of the season.
Lou Nichols, yeah. From Central Michigan. Yeah, wild stuff, man. He's only gotten by 50 yards, so like I don't know what happens afterwards, but yeah. Yeah, nothing to add. Tyler Beatty's awesome. He was honored on senior day, even though he's technically got junior eligibility. Like, yeah, he's going to go. He's going to make some money in the NFL. Maybe win a Doak Walker Award. I don't know. We'll see. But I think at this point, BK, it is for certain he's going to be on an all-SEC team.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be first. Or he's going to get some votes for first. What do you think at this point?
He should. He should be the guy. At this point, there, if you're a voter and you're not voting for Tyler Beatty, question yourself as to why.
Yeah.
I mean, see, honestly, I just don't understand what the explanation could be, because now he's done it against quality opponents. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you could possibly need to see more from him. And he's doing this behind an offensive line that is not as good as what you would see at an Alabama, for example, or Kentucky, where they have a very good offensive line. There's no logical explanation for it. So he would be my first team all SEC running back. And yeah, you want to talk Doak Walker, you want to talk any other awards this offseason, I'm here to listen, because he's worthy of any of them.
Yeah. And of course, we'll see how he does on his pro day. But God, just from a resume standpoint, certainly he's got the skills that any NFL team would want to add immediately. We'll do NFL draft talk when the time comes. But like at this point, I mean, it could be second round, maybe a third round, depending on how the order shakes out. But he's certainly a value that it seems to me that NFL teams would certainly take him higher.
Yeah. I think he'll be a top 75 pick in this year's draft. So somewhere between the second and third round, I think that's probably where he falls.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tyler. I know you don't listen, but I'm pretending that you do. Thank you for everything. Also, tear up Arkansas for me. I know it's probably going to be a rough game, but I'd love to beat the Pigs for the sixth year in a row. And I like Tyler Beatty to be able to do that. Last thing on here, this is fun. So Dan Mullen got fired. Now, he didn't get fired because he lost to Missouri. He got fired because he hadn't beaten a Power 5 team like all year, and then let Samford put up 52 points on him, and also kind of just in general horse's ass. But he is gone. He is fired officially today. He was allowed to fly home with the team, and they fired him in Gainesville. But this kind of goes back to a fun little thing that Missouri is known for in the SEC anyway. Kind of feels like the Tigers are a little grim reaper for head coaches. Cause if you go back and you look, coaches that were fired immediately following losses to Mizzou, this is from Dave Matter. Butch Jones at Tennessee in 2017, fired after losing to Mizzou. Brett Bielema in 2017, didn't even make it off the field before the AD walked up and fired him. Derek Mason got fired at Vanderbilt. You all forget about that one. I know I did. Last year, after he lost to Missouri, Derek Mason was fired. And then this year, Dan Mullen. Take it back. And if you think of Derek Dooley and Joker Phillips at Tennessee and Kentucky in 2012, they were fired 1 week after losing to Missouri. So we've got this reputation as coach killers. And I think it's very funny. Then you take it a step further and you go, oh, wait, it's because teams in the SEC think Missouri sucks and that if you lose to Missouri, you should get fired. But then you can really bring it all the way back to Galaxy Brain and say, look, you suck anyway. We're just the final nail in the coffin. And it's not that you lost to us. It's that you couldn't beat anybody else. And then we rubbed salt in the wound. So I view this as a positive thing, BK. You can have your national championships. I'm going to go ahead and put national coach killing championship in the locker room. And I'm going to dance around it happily.
Yeah, I love it. I'm also happy to dance on the Florida coaching grave that is Dan Mullen. I loved seeing Eli Drinkwitz after the game with his lightsaber. That was tremendous. I mean, Dan Mullen just did not buy himself any goodwill. I felt bad after you saw last year Derek Mason was fired. Mm-hmm. Derek Mason just seems like a good dude, and he just didn't work out. It's the same way that I felt about like at Mizzou. When Barry Odom was fired, I didn't take any pleasure in that. No. I liked Barry Odom personally. I thought he was a pretty good football coach. It just didn't work here. Kim Anderson, when he was fired from Mizzou basketball, it just didn't work. And you hoped that it would, and it didn't. Dan Mullen didn't work, and he was a jerk. Mm-hmm. I just disliked the guy. He made himself into a character of himself, and maybe that's just who he is, and so it wasn't like some sort of act or anything. He didn't recruit. He was a jerk to seemingly everybody. His program seemed slightly dysfunctional. It didn't seem like the players were exactly bought into what he was selling. I don't feel all that bad for him. And oh, by the way, he's going to get, what, $6 million to go away
yeah.
with no offset money in it. So he'll be able to double dip and make more money elsewhere as well. Like, all right, sweet. See you, Dan Mullen. I think he's a pretty good football coach. I wouldn't want him coaching my football team. I do think he's going to be successful in whatever comes next as like a group of five coach or a lower level power five coach. I just have no sympathy for him losing this job.
I've seen him floated for the Virginia Tech job.
Makes sense.
I can kind of see it. He's got a, like I said, he's got a constant chip on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And Virginia Tech is a program that has a constant chip on their shoulders. So I could see that working. Now you got to recruit the DMV. You got to bring in some kids, especially from the Newport News area. But like, I could see him doing it.
He should coach at Ole Miss. He should be the next Ole Miss coach.
Because Lane Kiffin's going to take the Miami job.
Or Florida.
Oh, God.
Either one.
Jeez. You know, here's the thing about the Florida job. And, you know, for you or me, you know, growing up when we did, Florida's like very much kind of a flash in the pan program. Because, like, Steve Spurrier was a quarterback there. He won a Heisman in the 60s. Then he comes back in the 80s and 90s and gets him some national championships by like revolutionizing offense. And then they hire one of the best program builders ever in Urban Meyer. But outside of those guys, like Florida sucks. Like they can reel in big names. You know, obviously they got the talent in their backyard, but like they're not very good. And it feels like to me that they benefited from not, you know, the nation not really realizing what Florida had in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And then, again, benefiting from Urban Meyer. But now everybody recruits Florida. So there's no, like, any dudes, like, sneaking under the radar. And they go everywhere. They don't just stay at Florida. I think I read something like the top 20 Florida players in last year's class, like, or was it top 50? I don't know. There's only, like, 9 blue chippers from Florida that signed with the Florida school, is the point. All the others went somewhere else. So, like, it's not as much of an advantage as you think. And then Florida just historically is not that great of a program outside of their 2 national championship winning coaches. I understand that. But, like, it's a tough job, and I don't know who they're going to look at, but I just kind of feel like they're going to get 3 years and flame out like the past 2 guys did.
Maybe. I mean, as much as we say the last 2 guys flamed out, though, like, I mean, Dan Mullen won 11 and 10 games in 2018 and in 2019.
How many did he win this year?
No, I'm with you. He's won 5. He has absolutely flamed out. But the failure came with, at the front end, he won 10 and 11 games. Like, yeah. You can do it there. You can win at a really high level. Jim McElwain won 10 games in his first year on campus. Yeah. Even Will Muschamp was able to win 11 games at Florida. If you are a solid to good head coach, you can do it at a very high level there. So if I am somebody like Lane Kiffin, for example, I can win at a much higher level at Florida than I can at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. It's just factually accurate that you're going to have a much higher ceiling there. I would go to Miami, frankly, if I was Lane Kiffin. I think that's the perfect job for him. But if he's not offered the Miami job, he should be. But if he's not, yeah, I would go to Florida. Mario Cristobal, he should also be one of the top targets for Miami. If he's interested in leaving Oregon, I don't know why he would be, but if he is, Florida and Miami should both be interested in a guy like that. I don't know if Luke Fickell is interested in leaving Cincinnati, but he would be a guy that I would be targeting if I'm Florida. So they've got some intriguing candidates. The problem is, if all of those guys say no, Nate, we can talk about this in the offseason as we like wrap up the season for Mizzou. College football has a problem right now in that they have gone through so many coaches over the last 3 to 5 years. There are no more up-and-coming coaches to really go through. Mm-hmm. The last name for the SEC is basically Billy Napier. There's not a whole lot of other guys that have been able to build their programs at the lower levels because, like, Eli Drinkwitz did it for a year,
and
was the hottest candidate that Mizzou could go after. Everybody's firing their coaches so quickly now, and they're cycling through all of these other guys so quickly, there's just not a whole lot of candidates. It's a really bad cycle to have to go through something like this. So, I mean, Florida's list for me is basically Billy Napier, Lane Kiffin, Luke Fickell, Mario Cristobal. And after that, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. You know who's getting floated right now, as far as rumors go for Florida? Bill O'Brien.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Bill O'Brien is the Alabama offensive coordinator right now, who everybody in Tuscaloosa is ready to run out.
Bill O'Brien is Dan Mullen.
Basically, yeah.
Like, he was the Houston Texans head coach. Everybody hated him. He was at Penn State and did a really good job of rebuilding mm-hmm. that program, but he's not exactly known for his recruiting.
No, he does not recruit.
He's a guy that is known for his scheme. Much like Dan Mullen. Like, you would be firing Dan Mullen to hire a lesser version of Dan Mullen.
Yeah.
Because at least I know Dan Mullen's a pretty darn good coach. I'm not sure if Bill O'Brien is or not.
I would say no, but that's just me. I just think of the schools that are open in this coaching carousel. USC.
Dude, it's some big names.
LSU. Washington. Now Florida. I'm not even mentioning, on top of that, Washington State, Texas Tech, TCU. And we're not even done with the season yet. This is such a product of early signing day, when you have to sign your class, you know, in December, basically. So if you wait to hire a guy, they start off with a terrible recruiting class that first year. And then 3 years in, that's the class that are their seniors, and that's when they're scuffling. Mm-hmm. Get them out. And you just do it over and over and over and over again. That's why this is changing. That's why Georgia Southern hired Clay Helton November 3rd. He's already on campus. He's already recruiting, because they know they got to get their guy in there now to build that recruiting class. You know, UMass just hired Don Brown from Arizona. Arizona's season's not done yet. Don Brown's their defense coordinator. He's gone. And these are G5 teams. Like, you got to hire someone who's not a head coach, because you need to get them in immediately. And I don't know where USC or LSU or Florida or Washington are going to get their guy. It's probably going to be an internal hire just to keep the recruiting class afloat. But, like, it's making program building impossible. And I don't know how much say head coaches have in these rules with the NCAA, but you kind of have to think that from an agent, from a coaching standpoint, they're going to push back on someone and say, look, you got to give us a break. We got to renegotiate this early signing day, because it's making everything so damn expensive and so impossible to find success that, yeah, I think you're just going to find retreads like Mack Brown over and over, because they've run through the entire pool already.
Another guy that we did not mention, like, these are the types of names that are going to be floated because there are no other candidates, really. Like, the lower level candidates that you would typically see floated right now don't exist. And so it's other Power Five coaches that are now being discussed as maybe they go get this guy if he's interested. And then once those get floated and they are, like, basically battered down, I don't know where these teams go. Mark Stoops is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. For these openings, especially Florida, he's a really good coach. I don't know if he's the type of coach that Florida would want. They typically lean more offense there, but mm-hmm. He's a really good football coach. And if they want a good coach, he's the type of guy that I would go after. Another one that was introduced as a possibility from Bruce Feldman that I am intrigued by is Todd Monken.
Oh, yeah.
I think Todd Monken is awesome. He was the Southern Miss head coach. He is now the offensive coordinator at Georgia. I don't know how much he's actually running his offense there versus kind of what they want to do. But Todd Monken at his heart is like a run and gun, like just up and down type of offense. I would love to see that at Florida. I also have no idea how he would be as a recruiter at a place like that. So there are some questions that would have to be answered if you were to get that job. But I mean, that's the kind of thing that you're looking at. If you don't get one of these 3 to 5 candidates that everybody would agree, okay, yeah, that would be a good hire, you're getting into a bunch of guys that are like, ooh, there are some red flags here. But yeah, if you squint hard enough, you could maybe see it work.
Yeah.
All of it makes me appreciate that Missouri is not in the cycle this year,
right?
By the way.
Right. And don't worry about Eli Drinkwitz leaving. Like I said, I'm going to actually write a piece about this probably in the off season. But you don't hire sitting Power Five coaches to take over a Power Five job, because A, it would look really bad for them to leave in the middle of the season, and then they would turn around and do it to you. But you need to get them in for recruiting early. And so they're typically going to be looking at like a positional coach or a coordinator to do that, because it's just, it's too expensive and it's too hard to steal a Power Five coach. And I'll go through the numbers over the past couple of years and how that's declined. But for now, if you're worried about Drink leaving, worry about him getting fired first. And I don't think that's going to happen. So,
and there are just other guys that seem more likely, especially in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Like Lane Kiffin, I think is totally in play mm-hmm. for these other jobs. But I don't think that this is, maybe there is a day where that time would come. This is not the off season in which we've got to worry about it. Not yet.
You're not going to hire the Missouri coach who's won half his games in two years.
Not yet.
You're just not going to do that. So anyway, hey, we beat Florida. That was cool. BK, any last thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't think so, man. I'm looking forward to our midweek show. Mm-hmm. It's an early week this week. Mizzou plays on Black Friday, in case you don't remember. They technically have a rivalry game this week, mm-hmm. ladies and gentlemen. It's forced down our throat. It is sponsored. Can't wait for it. It is going to be a fun game in all seriousness. Arkansas has become a very good football team this year. Their quarterback is electric. By the way, defensive end-wise, they've got a dude who used to play at Missouri who's like really good for them now, which is very frustrating. Yeah. But Barry Odom back against Missouri once again. So it'll be a fun one. I don't know that it's going to go particularly well for Mizzou, but they got 6 wins, and that's ultimately what this season was all about. Yep. So kudos to this team. That was an inspired effort, and it was good to see them come out on the winning end and senior day for their guys to be able to celebrate once again. Pretty cool.
Hashtag beat Barry again. All right. Well, that's going to be our show for today. Like BK said, we'll be back on Wednesday, but we appreciate the downloads and the subscriptions. Leave a comment. Give us a rate. We can love all types of feedback from you guys. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Nate G. Edwards. He is at BK Sports Talk. And of course, you can follow the Rockin' flagship at Rockin' Nation and listen to BK on the radio in St. Louis, 101 ESPN. We appreciate you tuning in this time. We'll try to do better next time. And until then, MIZ.
ZOU.